Tonight, from Trump Tower, the presumptive nominee, Donald Trump, joins me live after a resounding win. Cruz and Kasich quit as Trump and Clinton gear up for a general election for the ages. Towering inferno, frantic evacuations as a massive wildfire explodes out of control, torching entire neighborhoods, even the Emergency Operations Center staff forced to flee. Exploding airbags blamed for a string of deaths, the largest recall in history. Now even larger, 17 automakers, tens of millions of cars. Is your car one of them? And Prince Bombshell, the music legend, one day from getting emergency treatment for a reported addiction to painkillers. A tragic twist. The man who found him and called 911. Nightly News begins right now.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. Raise your hand if you predicted this a year ago. 323 days ago, Donald Trump rode down the escalator here at Trump Tower to announce he was running for president, a candidacy that many across the country, political analysts, members of the media, and his opponents didn't think stood a chance. But with Cruz and Kasich now out, Trump is the Republican Party's presumptive nominee for president. It's a remarkable moment in American political history as a celebrity billionaire insurgent embarks on an epic general election battle against likely the first woman nominee and wife of a former president. But first, Trump has a lot of work to do just to repair the deep fissures in his own party, some saying they will never vote for him. In a moment, I'll sit down with Donald Trump in his office for a live conversation. But first, NBC's Peter Alexander starts us off.
Tonight, lights out for the candidate who once compared Donald Trump to the Prince of Darkness.
And as I suspend my campaign today, I have renewed faith, deeper faith, that the Lord will show me the way forward.
John Kasich abruptly ending his campaign this morning, scrubbing a flight to Washington after boarding the plane, telling friends his heart isn't in it. Trump, a first-time politician, is now the last Republican standing after routing 16 rivals, roughly 150 years of political experience.
He's not a serious candidate. He's an entertainer.
Donald Trump's not going to be the Republican nominee.
A major American party does not nominate Donald Trump, but I just can't believe it. I'll have to go to Canada.
His next challenge, transforming from a brawler to a coalition builder, bringing the fractured GOP together.
I am confident that I can unite much of it, but honestly, there are some people I really don't want.
And Donald Trump has the biggest upside and the biggest downside of any candidate I've ever seen. You don't know which one is going to dominate, but his track record so far is pretty astonishing.
Trump's improbable rise igniting a firestorm on social media, many Republicans burning their party ID cards. Conservatives today facing an existential crisis.
We have to decide now, are we going to move forward and do all we can to help a Donald Trump, or are we going to recognize that without that we'll have a Democrat president?
Many expressing concerns about Trump.
And some of the things he said about women and about Muslims and about religious freedom, I just can't support.
Trump's success going forward likely dependent on his ability to dial back the harsh rhetoric. Trump, the front runner for most of this campaign, will need a come-from-behind win to defeat Hillary Clinton, now boasting a 13-point advantage. His supporters energized by the outsider.
He reaches people, and people are comfortable with him. He's been in people's living rooms for 13 years. People know who he is, and they keep coming back to him, and they trust him.
There's an authenticity to what he's doing and an authenticity to the fact that he could win.
Late today, Donald Trump acknowledged he'd consider John Kasich as a possible VP, but a source close to Kasich tells me there is no chance that will happen. Also tonight, we've confirmed that both Presidents George W. Bush and his father George H.W. Bush will stay silent and not endorse anyone for president. Lester?
Peter Alexander, thanks. On the Democratic side, it was Bernie Sanders who emerged as the victor last night in Indiana while vowing to fight Clinton till the end. But that victory did not change the delegate math and the reality that Clinton is the overwhelming frontrunner to take on Trump, who will sit down with me live in just a moment. But as NBC's Andrea Mitchell reports, Hillary Clinton is already deploying her plan of attack against him.
Tonight, Hillary Clinton plotting her strategy against Donald Trump. Her playbook, with Trump trying to brand her as Crooked Hillary.
Crooked Hillary.
She is portraying him as risky Trump.
I think he is a loose cannon, and loose cannons tend to misfire.
Will a contest between two unpopular candidates be scorched earth? She says that's up to him.
He's the one who's run the campaign, insulting people, demeaning women, degrading people with disabilities, talking about keeping Muslims out of the country. He's the one who's been running that kind of very negative, aggressive, bullying campaign.
Now the prospect of Trump, the nominee, is rallying Democrats. Elizabeth Warren tweeting that he, quote, built his campaign on racism, sexism, and xenophobia. Does Clinton agree?
I think Elizabeth Warren's really smart.
The other part of her strategy, reach out to anti-Trump Republicans and independents. The campaign late today releasing this video, highlighting his GOP critics.
He is a con artist.
A phony.
Donald Trump is the know-nothing candidate.
Donald is a bully.
But Clinton's challenges? An NBC News Wall Street Journal poll shows her favorability among independents has dropped 15 points since January. And in her loss in Indiana last night, she won only 41% of the white vote. The good news for Clinton? Despite her negatives, 51% of her supporters in a new poll say they'll vote for her because they're against Trump. And President Obama, once the primaries are over, will campaign passionately against Trump.
There's not going to be any complacency about going out and voting to make certain that Donald Trump isn't president. We're going to be joined by independents and Republicans who feel the same way.
But hanging over Clinton's campaign, those emails, a constant refrain from Trump. And today, a federal judge said that Clinton may have to testify about her private server in an unrelated case about her closest aide's employment. Lester.
Andrea Mitchell tonight. Andrea, thank you. And I am joined now by Donald Trump in his office. Good to see you. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Lester.
I'm sure the phone has been ringing off the hook today. Give me some names. Who called with congratulations today? A name that might surprise us.
Well, many people, but really, I think most interesting, people that you wouldn't believe, people that have been on your show saying terrible things, and now they all want to join. I don't want to do that. I think I have to let them come out and do the endorsements. But one called who said such bad things that, frankly, I said, how can you pivot back to me? He said, don't worry about it. They're politicians. Don't worry about it. So we're going to get a lot of endorsements. And I'm not so sure that endorsements matter, although Bobby Knight mattered a lot, I think, in Indiana because I won that so big.
Did you hear from Ted Cruz today?
I did not. I did not.
Do you expect to have a conversation with him?
I think we will. We got along very well for a long period of time. And then at the end, it was very competitive, very tough. He did a good job. He was a very competitive guy.
How about John Kasich?
I have not spoken to him. I've gotten along with him. We'll see how that goes, but I have not spoken to him.
You were sitting here watching the top of the broadcast with us. You saw images of Republicans burning their Republican registration cards, so angry at the idea of you representing the party. What did you think when you saw that?
Well, it's a little unfair, I think, from a broadcasting standpoint, because you didn't show the fact that we have millions more people that voted in the primaries than ever before. I'll be setting a record, an all-time record, above Ronald Reagan, above Nixon, above everybody. I just looked at it, went back a long way in terms of the Republicans coming in and voting for me in the primaries. I have many, many millions of people. I've gotten millions more than anybody else that ran. So we have a lot of new people coming into the party, Lester. Tremendous. Millions and millions of people. I think it's up over 70%. And nobody can believe it. It's one of the hottest stories in politics today.
You're speaking to the whole country now. You've said a lot of things. We've talked about this. Things that shocked people, that outraged people about a temporary ban on Muslim immigration to your characterizations of Mexican immigrants. Those things worked for you. They resonated. They worked. They got you to where you are today. But as you try to appeal to the entire country, do you stand by them? Do you stand, for example, by the idea of a ban against foreign Muslims coming here?
I do. We have to be vigilant. We have to be strong. We have to see what's going on. There's a big problem in the world. You look at what's happening with the migration in Europe. You look at Germany. It's crime-riddled right now.
Sounds like an urgent problem. Is that a first 100 days?
Well, that is an urgent problem. It is an urgent problem in this country. I mean, San Bernardino, you look at what happened in Paris, where people walk in, and this is frankly, a place where they don't have guns, and they walk in and they killed 130 people, with hundreds of people in the hospital now critically wounded. It's a real problem, and we have a president that doesn't want to even mention the name of radical Islamic terrorism. And unless you're going to mention it, unless you're going to try and do something about it, you're never going to solve the problem.
You've also promised to deport those in this country illegally. Do you stand by that?
And come back, yes. They're going to be deported. Look, we either have a country or we don't. We have many illegals in the country, and we have to get them out and go through a process, go through a system. And ones that have done well and have really achieved, we want to bring them back in.
Your negatives are staggering. Disapproval, 69% women, African-Americans, 88%, Latinos, 79%, people under 34, 75% disapprove. How much of that is self-inflicted by some of the rhetoric from the primary campaign, and how do you heal that while still respecting those who got you here?
Well, the highly respected Rasmussen poll just came out, and I'm 41-39 up on Hillary Clinton. It just came out. I haven't even started on Hillary Clinton yet, so I don't know what you're talking about with the negatives. Now, I will say, I think I'll do very well with women. And as you know, in the last seven states, which I won in landslides, I won in women, I won with African Americans, I won with Hispanics, I won at every single level.
So you discard all these numbers?
I don't discard anything. Numbers? I mean, I just started. I just got it not even 24 hours ago. I mean, I didn't know until 24 hours ago whether or not I was going to even win Indiana, and I won that in a landslide, a really record-setting landslide.
You've said a number of times that you haven't really started on Hillary Clinton, so start on her. Give me three words that you would use to define her that you will use as you press forward.
Well, you know, bad judgment is a couple of words that we can use, and they were used by Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders said she's not qualified to run for president because she suffers from bad judgment. And I think that's true. All you have to do is look at the email scandal. She's under FBI investigation now, and maybe she'll survive because the Democrats are protecting her, but that's the only reason she'll survive.
Is there anything off the table? You know, we talk about this epic showdown. Is there anything that's off the table in terms of what you'll go after?
Well, I'll see what they do with me. I mean, if they are fair, I'll be fair. We're going to have a very high-level campaign. I'd like to see
Clinton,
that.
Will he be part of this?
If they are fair with me, I'm going to be fair with them. Otherwise, he becomes part of it.
So, I mean, you would bring it up, though?
I would bring it up depending on what they bring up. It depends. I'd like to see a very high-level, policy-oriented campaign. If they treat me properly, I'm going to treat them properly. It would be a beautiful thing to see. You don't see it often, but I would like to see it.
She today used the term loose cannon in describing you and noted that loose cannons misfire. She talked about your blustering and your bullying. What's your response to that?
Well, it's a nasty term that was given to her by one of her pollsters, I guess. But the fact is that we need strength in this country. She's not strong. She's not going to be strong at the border. She's not going to be strong with our military. She's not going to be strong with ISIS, no matter how you look. Look at what she's done with Libya. Look at what a disaster it is. Even her vote to go into Iraq was a disastrous vote. Now, she was one of many. But it was a disastrous vote, and I've been against Iraq for many, many years. I said it's going to destabilize the Middle East.
You've been proud of the fact that you have self-funded your campaign to this point. You talk about donations can have, you know, poor, bad influence. There is a super PAC being formed now to support you. Where do you stand now as you move into the very expensive general election campaign? Will you accept donations?
Well, I don't know, first of all, about super PACs. I know that people maybe like me and they form a super PAC, but I have nothing to do with it. As you know, I'm not allowed to have anything to do with it, so we'll see what happens. As far as the campaign, I'm making decisions right now, but probably will work with the Republican National Committee, raise a lot of money, and go out and beat Hillary. We're going to try and raise over $1 billion, which is what's going to be necessary. I hear the Democrats maybe will get as high as $2 billion, but we want to raise up to $1 billion, maybe even over that. I'm not even sure that's necessary because I have a big voice. I go on shows like yours. I explain the truth, and people seem to go along with it. I mean, you look at the victories that I had over 16 people that are senators and governors and, you know, high-level people, and one by one, they're gone. And we'll see what happens now. But I think Hillary actually will be easier to beat than many of the senators, governors, et cetera, that we just were victorious with.
Tell me how the audit is going. You have not released your tax returns. You've talked about an IRS audit. Still going on?
It's still going on. I mean, they go on for a long time. I've been audited, and I'll tell you, honestly, it's very unfair. I've been audited every year for 13 or 14 years. Every year I get audited. and I will absolutely release my returns when the audit ends.
There's nothing in those returns you think that might make your supporters raise an eyebrow?
No, nothing. You? It's a very standard audit, and I have them all the time. And I have other friends that are very wealthy. They don't even know what I'm talking about. When I say I'm audited, they said they've never been audited. I get audited every single year, and I think it's very unfair.
Donald Trump, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much
for
your time.
Thank you very much.
Good talking to you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Still ahead tonight, more of the day's other news, including the mass exodus from a catastrophic fire, record evacuations, tens of thousands fleeing as a wildfire burns out of control. Also, the addiction doctor who reportedly says Prince asked for help, but it tragically arrived moments too late. We're back with the out-of-control wildfire, forcing mass evacuations on a historic level. It's already devoured an area bigger than Manhattan as tens of thousands are fleeing the flames. And now firefighters are asking the military for help. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has more from Alberta, Canada.
This is insane.
Panic and chaos on the highway. Families fleeing for their lives from Fort McMurray, Canada. Firefighters call this hell on earth. No stopping a wall of flames exploding. Racing out of control.
Get us out of Fort McMurray in one piece.
With fire surrounding and leaping the roads, it's a harrowing and narrow escape for many. 88,000 people on the run. The largest wildfire evacuation in Canada's history.
They didn't even let us take our things and when we asked them. So we lost everything now.
This massive inferno is feeding on dry forests. The blaze so intense, it's generating its own weather. At least 1,600 homes and businesses torched. A hospital evacuated. The scene, apocalyptic.
This fire is absolutely devastating. It's a loss on a scale that is hard for many of us to imagine.
200 firefighters are overwhelmed and losing ground. Reinforcements arriving in the air. The military called in.
For families that escaped the fire, now another disaster. Gas stations are running out of fuel. Lines are long, and stores are running out of food.
Let's go, let's go.
Tonight, tens of thousands are on the move, but so are the flames. A disaster unfolding, and the worst may be yet to come. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Fort McMurray, Canada.
We're back in a moment with a huge expansion of what is already the largest auto recall ever. One in every four or five cars now affected. A horrific scene outside Houston today when a man described as a disgruntled ex-employee returned to his former workplace and opened fire, killing a supervisor before taking his own life. A number of other injuries were also reported. Police say the man had been fired weeks before and was looking for retaliation. The largest automotive recall in American history is growing by a stunning amount. Highway safety officials announced today they are more than doubling the recall on Takata airbag inflators by another 35 to 40 million. That's on top of the 29 million already recalled, affecting one in every four or five cars on the road. 10 deaths in the U.S. have been linked to Takata inflators, which can explode upon impact. To find out if your vehicle is affected, visit our website. New revelations are coming to light about the final hours in the life of Prince. As the federal investigation grows, a renowned addiction doctor now claims Prince's team reached out to him just hours before the singer died. But by the time help arrived, it was too late. NBC's Stephanie Gosk has details.
The urgent call for help came the night before Prince died. A representative of the pop star reached out to Dr. Howard Kornfeld, a drug addiction specialist in California.
Good morning.
According to the doctor's Minneapolis attorney.
He set into motion a plan to deal with what he felt was a life-saving mission.
Kornfeld made Prince an appointment with a local doctor for the next day and sent his son, who is not an MD, on an overnight flight to meet with the musician and discuss the family's California addiction clinic, Recovery Without Walls.
But according to the attorney, when Andrew Kornfeld was brought here to Paisley Park on the morning of April 21st, no one could find Prince, so they started searching.
Andrew heard the screams and went to the elevator where he saw that Prince was unconscious.
Andrew called 911.
Medical, Paisley Park, for a hail down, not breathing.
When investigators arrived, Andrew handed over buprenorphine, a drug used to treat opioid addiction, that he had brought with him from California. And tonight, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Minneapolis says it is joining the investigation into Prince's death. Until now, many friends and family have said Prince did not take drugs and did not have an addiction. But the question many are now asking, would the music legend still be alive today if help had only arrived sooner? Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, Minneapolis.
President Obama visited Flint, Michigan today, a city in the grips of a toxic water crisis. The president said Flint's water is safe if filtered, and to prove it, he took a sip himself. The president also gave a big hug to the 8-year-old girl whose invitation brought him to Flint. It's feared that thousands of children were exposed to lead in Flint's water. We're back in a moment with some final thoughts. Finally tonight, if you think this 2016 campaign has been wild so far, buckle up. The Trump versus Clinton showdown is shaping up to be a roller coaster ride, a general election maybe like we haven't seen in our lifetimes. And there are still 6 more months till Election Day. Let that sink in for a moment. On that note, that's going to do it for us on this Wednesday evening. I'm Lester Holt for all of us at NBC News. Thank you for watching, and good night.